You are listening to Living for the Cinema with Jeff Gershon. I am a cinema enthusiast of all genres, here to discuss with you one film every episode. The good, the bad, and the ugly of what makes each film unique. Spoiler alert. No matter when this film was released, there's a good possibility I will be revealing spoilers about the plot or even possibly the ending, so just be warned. The Crow, which came out in 1994 and was directed by Alex Proyas. It stars Brandon Lee, Rochelle Davis, Ernie Hudson, Michael Wincott, Bai Ling, Sophia Sheenis, Anna Thompson, David Patrick Kelly, Angel David, Lawrence Mason, Michael Massey, Tony Todd, Bill Raymond, and John Polito. The genre would be supernatural revenge thriller.
People once believed that when a soul can't rest, a crow can carry it back from the dead to seek justice and put the wrong things right. Friday, May 13th.
Not a good day to be a bad guy.
Brandon Lee.
I love you.
The Crow, rated R.
It's funny. The Nightmare Before Christmas came out about 9 months before this movie did, and I have to think that after some enterprising boomer caught both films, the concept of Hot Topic was born. I don't know for sure, I'm just guessing. Because this film has got style, and even more style for good measure. It not only looks fantastic from a costume, set, and cinematography standpoint, but all the action is fluidly shot, and considering the budget constraints that they had at the time, the mix of CGI and in-camera action actually looks more convincing than comic book films featuring characters running and jumping off of rooftops, which would come out barely a decade later. I'm talking about Spider-Man, Daredevil, Catwoman. Director Alex Proyas likely made the best film possible, considering the tragedy of what occurred on set. Brandon Lee's accidental death by gunshot. Now, it's hard not to view the story of this film through the lens of what happened to Lee, but it never feels exploitive at the very least. I remember seeing this opening night in college, and the buzz around it was hard to ignore. I think there was even speculation, I mean, this was pre-internet days, mind you, that we would see the actual incident of his accidental shooting on screen. And of course, thankfully, that was not the case. But much of the talk was about Brandon Lee and the star that he could have been.
Hold still. Each one of these is a life. A life you helped destroy.
Come back now, right? Don't kill me.
I'm not going to kill you. Your job will be to tell the rest of them that death is coming for them. Tonight. Tell them Eric Draven sends his regards.
At the time, to me, it just felt like a solid enough action movie with a really timely soundtrack. And having now rewatched this film for likely the first time in decades, I can see that the rest of the film holds up pretty well too. Proyas clearly has a great eye, as does DP Darius Wolski, but the film pretty much achieves exactly what it sets out to do as a stylish, supernatural, urban revenge tale. Every set piece works, the cast performs well, and there's even just enough heart. Beyond that, Brandon Lee is surrounded by a rogues gallery of character actors who are great at playing scumbags. John Polito, Tony Todd, David Patrick Kelly, God, he's been in everything, Commando, The Warriors, and of course, the irreplaceable Michael Wincott.
Dad gave me this. Fifth birthday. He said, childhood's over the moment you know you're gonna die.
Wincott sporting a long black mane of vampire-like hair just has the perfect sinister look. And beyond that, he has the perfect gravelly voice to play scuzzbag goth gangster overlords like his top dollar here. And he is fun to watch.
Gideon's pawn shop just burned down to the foundation.
Nobody cleared this little event with me.
I didn't have nothing to do with that.
Well, sure, you must be awful disappointed.
I got trouble. One of my crew got himself perished.
Yeah, and who might that be?
Tintin. Somebody stuck his blades in all his major organs in alphabetical order.
Well, gentlemen, by all means, I think we ought to have an introspective moment of silence for poor old Tintin.
This brings me to the categories, and the first category would be the best needle drop. This is the best song cue or piece of score used throughout the runtime of the film, because music is essential to film. Now, about that industrial-flavored soundtrack featuring The Cure, Nine Inch Nails, Jane Siberry, My Life with a Thrill Kill Cult, and Rollins Band, it still holds up. I mean, talk about timely, too. I think I attended Lollapalooza, actually, a few weeks later after seeing this, and I'm fairly confident that at least half of the bands on this soundtrack performed there as well. Well, there is cross-promotion, so maybe that was planned. Amazingly, this film is wall-to-wall goth anthems, which actually do not distract, but enhance the overall story. I mean, seriously, I had thought, rewatching this, that I had outgrown The Cure. But there's that iconic scene about 15 minutes in when we see Eric Draven, Brandon Lee's character, gearing up with his makeup and then slowly walking towards that bay window as the camera pans out with the fast-paced Cure song Burn building on the soundtrack. It still gets me pumped. It's a genuinely great hero moment. Or if we're being honest, anti-hero moment. Now, as much as I've always loved The Cure, and that song provides a great moment, there's an even more memorable anthem on the soundtrack, which I love even more. Which, funnily enough, is actually barely heard within the movie. I think for maybe 30 seconds in the background at one point, and then at the very end of the closing credits. However, this song was all over the marketing for this movie, and it became a pretty sizable radio hit in the months after this film's release. And it came from San Diego's most beloved grunge rock band at the time, I think, Stone Temple Pilots.
Driving faster in my car.
Yeah, I guess I'm going through memory lane here, but I can also remember at the time that this came out that it was very hip to bash on the Pilots as a watered-down version of Pearl Jam or Nirvana, which I'm sure I was guilty of myself. But make no mistake, this song really slaps, especially its rousing chorus. I'm, of course, referring to The Big Empty. The next category would be wasted talent. This is the most underutilized talent involved with the film. Now, can I look back at this movie and confidently say that Brandon Lee would have been a, quote, great actor? I mean, just not enough to go on, to be honest. But I have little doubt that he would have been a compelling action hero. He could have been a great Jason Bourne, or possibly excelled with a lot of the genre roles which, say, a Carl Urban would have eventually gotten.
Freeze! Don't ever do that, man.
Good likeness.
I saw your body, man. You died. You got buried.
You still have your hat on.
I gotta sit down. Shit. Holy shit. Say, are you some kind of ghost? Boo.
I don't know what I am. I need you to tell me what happened to us.
Lee's Eric Draven is an elegantly drawn character, even with minimal dialogue. Now, he does nicely in a couple of character-building scenes, especially with Ernie Hudson, who is pretty much the heart of this movie, playing Albrecht, a devoted cop trying to help Eric Draven with his post-death mission. And they have one really nice touching scene together about halfway through.
Now, you took a six-story swan dive out of a window. She was beaten and raped, died at the hospital. Hey, you ask, man. I mean, come on, read the file. Shelley Webster held on for 30 hours in intensive care, and body finally just gave it up. I saw it, man. I couldn't do jack for her. You okay?
I saw her through your eyes. You stayed with her the whole time.
It's here that we see that Lee is likable, sympathetic, and surely charismatic to the point where I wanted more scenes like this. But I would gather that some might not have been filmed, given what happened. Given how the actual production process was cut short by his unfortunate passing. Now, given that we don't have too many scenes like this, it does still help the film move briskly from set piece to set piece, so maybe that was just a creative choice on Price's part. Regardless, the tragedy of what happened to Brandon Lee at the age of 28 in the production of this movie and his ultimate performance will always serve as a reminder of a genuine talent who probably had so much more to give.
Is this your wife?
Yeah, well, not anymore. We're getting a divorce.
It's funny. Little things used to mean so much to Shelley. I used to think they were kind of trivial. Believe me, nothing is trivial.
The next category would be the trailer moment. This is the scene or moment that best describes this movie. Now back to Wincott playing the main villain, Top Dollar. That's what he's named, Top Dollar. He likely leads what I would consider to be my favorite sequence in the movie, which occurs just over an hour in. And it happens to be one of my favorite comic book movie tropes, and one which has appeared in Blade, Dick Tracy, Batman, and The Dark Knight. With the exception of Dark Knight, actually all those movies came out in the 90s. So maybe it was more of a 90s thing, but no matter. I'm referring to the villains board meeting. It's a great showcase for Wincott as he monologues about his latest observations and plans.
I started the first fires in this goddamn city. Where I knew it, every charlatan shitheel was imitating me. Do you know what they got now? Devil's Night greeting cards. Isn't that precious? The idea has become the institution, boys. Time to move along.
You don't want us to do light my fire time for the whole city.
No, I want you to set a fire so goddamn big the gods will notice us again. That's what I'm saying.
Of course, guess who comes calling to interrupt things? And for me, the standout moment occurs when Draven playfully leaps atop this long table with just one demand.
The hell that thing get in here?
Gentlemen!
You're him, huh? The Avenger. The killer of killers. Nice outfit. Not sure about his face, though.
I just want him.
Well, you can't have him.
Well. I see you have made your decision.
Which Wincott is pitch perfect, just cutting him off, growling.
Oh, this is already boring the shit out of me. Kill him! That had to hurt.
Just another example of just how efficient everything is done in this film. And what results is a balletic shootout, with Draven pretty much going 360 degrees in every direction to not only dodge all the gunfire coming his way from all of Top Dollar's goons, but also to dispense his own in response. I mean, if you can't see the influence that sequences like this would have on The Matrix, which would just come out a few years later, then you're just not paying attention.
You're all going to die.
Yeah.
And this brings me to the final category, the MVP, the person or people who are most responsible for the success of this film. At the end of the day, this is a director's movie, one which had a uniquely troubled production due to tragedy, which could have only come together under the leadership of not only a steady hand, but a creative one. In the 12 or so years leading up to this film's release, Alex Proyas, originally from Greece, though mostly grew up in Australia, did a bit of everything, including helming music videos, commercials, and even an experimental film or two. Over his career, he has also served as an editor, cinematographer, and composer. He was always comfortable wearing different hats. Now, this was not his first feature film, but it was certainly his biggest project to date. And with a limited budget and some experimental visual effects to insert his now deceased star into some key scenes, he truly delivered something cohesive, engaging, and visually distinctive. The seams do show at a few points, but just not as much as you would think. We are given a fully satisfying ABCD structured story, even with some unique flourishes along the way. And for pulling that off relatively early in his career, Alex Proyas is the MVP.
And that's why I finished the movie. I finished it for Brandon. I after being devastated about what happened, we shut down the production and I left. I went back to Australia. And then months later, I went back and watched the movie, and his family, all the other actors, everyone involved said, "You've got to finish this movie because Brandon's so great in it." And he was. I was able to watch it and see how great he was. And I thought that the movie deserves to be completed because it's his legacy, you know. So that's what the movie is. It's not just a movie. It's not just a movie that can be remade. It's one man's legacy.
And my overall rating for The Crow would be 4.25 stars out of 5. Now, yes, I'm aware that there's another Crow remake coming out soon. And I think Bill Skarsgård's an excellent actor. But honestly, I just have no interest in seeing it. Because for me, this movie does it all. Happy 30th anniversary to one of the best comic book adaptations of the 1990s. And if you're looking to watch The Crow, it is now streaming on Prime Video, Fubo, Paramount Plus, MGM Plus, Hoopla, and Showtime TV. And that ends another Big Empty review. Please like, subscribe, and share the Living for the Cinema podcast, and follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And join us next time for another review from Living for the Cinema.